How does a explorer get its market cap to over 250 million from around about 100 million in the space of a few months, and they've got $25 million in the tin? What do they do?
Raise a lot of money.
You could, that's one option. Here's another one.
G'day, Money Miners. 12th of July. Welcome to the show. State of Origin night. Can't wait to watch New South Wales possibly lose the series 2-1, likely lose 3-0. A bit of a sour end to the State of Origin series, JD.
It is, mate. Can't say I've caught
you could not any, give, any you of the games. You couldn't give two flying fucks about my pain, but you do about the pain, that's not about the State of Origin.
That's it, mate. I feel for you. I feel for you.
Mate, we have been, you would say it's a love letter, but we have been given, we've been given two poems.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what to make of them, mate. But
we've had poems written for us.
Nevertheless, for the Money Miners.
The Hooteroo chat group, we've had a great Money Miner now that has pumped out a couple of poems for us. Was it Christopher, wasn't it?
I think it was. So for those Money Miners not in the Hooteroo group, Maddie's going to read you a bit of poetry.
Join the Hooteroo chat. Join the Facebook Money Miners group first. Yeah. That gets you into the Hooteroo.
So just
chat.
Sit back.
She's bloody flying, nearly 500 members.
Yeah, it's going well, mate.
Right. So he ripped one out and then Trav put a little tweet up about our little smack talk yesterday, and from some of that chat, which involves some crude activity in my underground mining
Questionable behaviour.
The second poem arrived, and we're going to read it out today. It has a real masturbation theme to it.
It does. So just sit back, close your eyes, and listen to Maddie.
Just drop your pants and have a listen to this. So, poem. Right, here goes nothing. How do you reckon my poetry's going to go, JD?
We're about to find out. The radio talk.
This is poem number two with the heightened masturbation theme. Maddie, Travis and Jonas, blokes quite rare. In the Aussie mining news, they take their share. Drilling deep into the core of each tale, with laughter and wanking, they set sail. Maddie the miner, as hard as a rock, vapes his way through the tick of the clock. He'd wank to the sound of the drilling beat. Dreaming of gold, ain't that sweet? Travis the banker, lost in the thrill, left his desk for the drilling drill. He'll pull his pud to the symphony of gold, in his bogan dreams he's ever bowled. And Jonas, the nerd, in his data mine, found pleasure in each revealing line. He'd jerk his gherkin all grins and glee to the sound of information as rich as the sea. Three bogans under the Aussie sun, their hands busy, their spirits one. They'd toss off to the rhythm so raw and wild. In the pursuit of gold, they're like a child. Hooteroo mates, they'd roar in delight. With each pull, their dreams ignite. Drilling for gold in their unique way, they're the wanking miners, come what may. So here to the blokes who chase the dream, to the rhythm of the drill they gleam. Maddie, Travis and Jonas, the bogan band, wanking their way through the golden land. Oh, fuck me, that is hilarious. We will go poem number one tomorrow, but that poem two was too good. It had to be said today.
Tune in for poem number two tomorrow.
Far out. Love it. Good on you, Chrissy.
Talented man.
Christopher, a.k.a. Banjo Patterson. we've got a couple of little deep dives today. We're going to go European lithium. We're going to revert to me, and I've gone deep into vanadium after Neo Metals. Was I supposed to go deep into vanadium, or have I just...
Listen, you were supposed to sort of flick through the Neo Metals announcement, but we're going to get a whole run through of the vanadium market.
Well, Trav's wheeling and dealing at the moment, so he's I've been forced to research, and I'm excited to see. I'd like to get a review, JD.
Mate, I'm thrilled to see what you've come up with. There's a lot of notes there. we'll round off with an oldie but a goodie. The Nifty mine.
Nifty. Yeah. We did touch on it the other week, didn't we? With Cyprian and Nifty.
With Metals X, the former owner. So.
And you found yourself into some deep rabbit holes there as well, didn't you?
I sure did. So how about we take it from the top?
European lithium.
So, questionable corporate governance.
I swear we've talked about this before, questionable corporate governance.
Yeah, where did that come up, mate? I can't quite remember.
Yesterday, the day before, 3 days last week.
Every other day. So, yeah, Let's get into this one, and the money miners can sort of see what they think. So European Lithium, they've got the Wolfsburg Lithium Project in Austria. Now, this story revolves around performance rights. So there were 40 million performance rights up for grabs. They would vest on the company having a market cap greater than 250 million at a certain point in time. And there was another 40 million performance rights up for grabs for the three executives that would be awarded with the company coming out with a DFS for their lithium project of greater than $800 million.
Is this a hard rock lithium or brine lithium?
It is hard in rock. On the outer Alps in Austria.
Okay.
So beautiful country out there. So both of these rights lapsed at the end of last year, but no worries. We'll just modify the dates. They pushed them out to the 30th of June this year.
So the same directors with the rights modified their own rights.
Well, I guess the board does, and we'll see what sort of sway they may have over the board.
That's so, a few votes.
Now, let's get to that MPV goal first. So they needed to get it over 800 million, and they did comfortably. So little surprise this was achieved. You know, you just use a lithium price of roughly where it is, maybe a bit higher than where it is today.
And make sure the consultant writes over 800 million.
Yeah, and you just forecast it sort of steadily ticking up that commodity price for the next 15 years. That should get you there, shouldn't it? So most of these studies have a bit of a sensitivity analysis, and these guys did include that. Now, if the lithium price were just 20% lower than the, you know, what you might call a bit of a buoyant price where it has been over the past couple of months, in particular when this study was done, now that would see the CapEx figure equal the MPV. And that is not something that gets funded, is it? CapEx equal to the MPV is not a super attractive project. So never mind. All is well. They get their 40 million performance rights. Now for those other ones. So, Maddie,
these are the market cap ones.
These are the market cap ones. How does a explorer slash, I guess, developer now get its market cap to over 250 million from around about 100 million in the space of a few months, and they've got $25 million in the tin? What do they do?
Well, you could either raise a lot of money.
You could. That's one option. Here's another one. Here's an alternative strategy.
Or you could
buyback.
A share buyback is to, you know, buy back the shares and increase the value per share of the shares that remain.
The traditional thinking is to increase the earnings per share for the remaining shares because there's less shares on issue.
So and this is something that companies that usually have a lot of cash will do. Like Northern Star have just been they recently did it last year.
They did one.
It's an alternative to distributing dividends, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a one of those two common methods of distributing capital to the owners of the business. So, I've never heard of a explorer or a developer doing a share buyback. I mean, this is these are companies traditionally that need to go on and raise a huge amount of money. Why would you do a buyback? The only time I can think of, the one that comes to mind in recent times in the resource space, obviously you have Northern Star, like you said, but it's the coal companies. Now, they trade at 1 to 2 times earnings, and they've just made, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars in profit.
And they're trading on such a low earnings multiple because of the decarb.
Exactly. And they're hardly allowed to buy anything else, so they're just returning that to shareholders that way. So back to European Lithium, on the 4th of April, they announced that they're doing this share buyback. And at that point in time, like I said, they capped it at about 100 million. The share price is about 7 cents. So their goal is to get it to roughly 16 cents. That would sort of equate to, taking in the buyback into account, around about a $250 million market cap. Now, to quote the executive chairman at the time, "The board believes the company's current share price does not reflect the underlying value of the company's assets. It's a fantastic opportunity to buy back shares at a significant discount and add value to our remaining shares on issue." Now, Maddie, I don't mind a share buyback for a profitable business. It's, like you said, a good way to return capital to shareholders. But for a company that's just released a DFS, they're looking to develop a mining asset, it just might not be the right time. So they go and spend $10 million on this buyback, and they also announce that it falls within a certain limit that is permitted by the Corporations Act, so they don't actually need to get any shareholder approval to do this. So unfortunately for them, they weren't able to get the share price up to that 16 cent mark. And coincidentally, despite them saying that they'd be buying back shares until January of next year, the buyback wrapped up last week or this week. So unfortunately that for them, like I said, they weren't able to get it there. The 40 million performance rights lapse, and the share price in the days after the buyback stopping and there being no longer that big wave of buying sees the company's share price fall back 15-odd%.
Walk me through this. So they were sitting at 100 mil market cap. They needed to get it to 250 million to have these performance rights vest, but they did a share buyback to increase the share price, but the share price, so that would have affected, because of the extra volume, that would have driven the market cap up as well, because obviously the share price goes up, but the market cap stays the same, doesn't it?
The idea is to just push the share price up by continuing to buy and hoping you get to a point where there's less people selling the stock. And even if you can, you know, do it on sort of thinner volume, get that share price to hang over 16 cents. That's the idea.
Yeah.
So.
But it didn't work. But
I didn't get anywhere near there. They got to 10 cents.
Yeah, but you wouldn't. You'd be hard pressed to think that they'd be able to double the market cap just from a buyback, wouldn't it?
You would be. You'd be very, very hard pressed to do that. So all this activity might be explained by an article I read in The West not too long ago that Perth Glory owner, who's also the chairman of European Lithium, has to sell part or all of the company to repay a loan he's got there. So,
repay a loan to the Perth Glory?
To the APL, it's a professional leagues association that the club needed to get a loan from during COVID when all professional sports were in a bit of a tough spot.
Yeah, right. Interesting. Yeah.
So hopefully we don't have to talk about too much more poor corporate governance.
Oh, yeah, because it's just going to stop today.
I've got a feeling it won't be the last. How about we get into vanadium, mate?
Well, this looks like great governance. So
Neo metals, hey?
Just looks like standard company behaviour. So, look, happy to talk about it, but it leads into something else. So, look, Neo metals, they announced today they've got a 100% offtake agreement for their vanadium recovery project with Glencore. So it's an agreement for guaranteed offtake for 100% of vanadium products. So that's ferrovanadium that goes into steel and everything, and vanadium pentoxide that will be used for batteries. And
batteries,
we'll get into,
mate,
what these batteries are. So
demand's going to fly.
Yeah. So I'll go into the agreement. Agreement is between Nirvana and Glencore. So Novana, I don't know how you pronounce it. So now this vanadium recovery project is in Finland. So, and it's Neo Metals have 72.5% ownership of it, and the remaining is with Critical Metals, who's a Scandinavian private unlisted mineral development company. They've got 27.5%. So, offtake is for an initial period of 5 years from the commencement date, which is 2026, I think it was. And then they can get another 2 years from that. So, Neo Metals are progressing to a final investment decision this quarter. So, how this is working, they are taking the slag. They get the slag from steel making, process it to get the vanadium back out of the slag. So the slag is the waste product from steel making. So they're getting like. That's how they're recovering this vanadium. It's not a
gotcha.
It's not a mine. It's a recycling. So
they have to build the. Assume since you said it will start in 26, they'll have to, after final investment decision, spend a little while constructing some sort of a plant to, you know, turn this slag into a saleable product.
Yeah, getting the vanadium back out of it. So, as Chris Reed quoted the MD, so removing volume risk on offtake is seen as a key requirement for securing project finance. So that'll be the market likes it. They're up 9%.
Yeah, we saw this as well with Centaurus not too long ago. They're developing the Jaguar nickel project in Brazil, and they had a slightly different scenario where they had Vale taking all the offtake and agreement, and on the day that they announced they'd cleaned that up, they'd bought back the offtake rights, the share price, I think too, ticked up 10-odd%, you know?
Yeah.
Something that investors were looking out for.
Yeah, no, it's a pretty – we'll be keen to get Chris on one day because he's very interesting business, Neo Metals. This is one aspect of it. So, because they've got this 10-year slag supply agreement with steelmaker SSAB. So mate, that's going to supply the slag for this vanadium recovery project. Then they've got lithium battery recycling part of the business.
It's all happening.
And then they've got the they've got their titanium project as well, which is titanium and vanadium that they're going to bring online. So
mate, we can tie in our uranium special. SSAB is one of the huge companies from Sweden who recently changed their uranium rights, and yep. they were the ones flagging that they'd need huge amounts of electricity going forward, hence the need for nuclear green energy to supply it. So
yeah, very interesting. Yeah, I reckon this they've got a it's a good history with Neo Metals. Like they were in JV for Mount Marion with Mineral Resources. They sold that. Widgie Nickel come out of Reed Resources, and then now they've got Neo Metals going down this recycling path, and very green, sustainable company. So
yeah, a lot going on.
Yeah, so it's very interesting. Vanadium, Jodo.
Yeah, let's dig into vanadium. So
what do you know about vanadium?
Well, the way I sort of look at it is similar in a sense to nickel. So there is this sort of, you know, blue sky future for battery use, but at the moment it's used in steel making. So,
yeah, so 80% of global vanadium goes in as a steel additive. Like it's a steel hardener.
Yeah, so it goes into.
You'll see them on your spanners and stuff. It'll say vanadium.
Yeah, as well, and it's used in like military applications and to build planes and stuff, resist heat and be strong.
Yeah, and same as you said with nickel, because I think 70% of current global nickel goes towards stainless steel.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but with the uptake of batteries, that's where that's going to change for nickel. But vanadium, it's a bit of a different type of battery. So the reason that vanadium is in the talk is due to vanadium redox flow batteries. So the nickel and all that, like all the critical minerals we talk about, like nickel, cobalt, and lithium and all that, they feed into the lithium-ion batteries. But these vanadium redox flow batteries, they're a much larger scale, sort of not at like a, they're like a base load battery. They're not something you'll put in your car. They're for like for power grids, like big massive things to like support, say you could use it to power a mine camp and things like that. They're like big batteries. So but
that's the goal of it.
That's the goal. So but for the uptake, it's dependent on like the scale and the uptake and the demand. So it's not gonna be as easily. So we haven't yet seen that.
Yeah.
So we're sort of waiting. Same as uranium really. So technology, it's been around for a while, like since the 1980s. I think it was invented in Australia, actually. So what it does, like vanadium can, when it's in solution, this vanadium can exist in four different valence states. So these vanadium redox flow batteries are it's essentially two tanks of this electrolyte, and it just flows in between it. So you've got a positive side and a negative side. So one side holds charge, one side releases it. So that's how it, you take charge out and put charge back in. So there's no anode or cathode. So, you know, in a lithium ion battery, you've got a graphite anode, and the cathode is like a nickel cobalt manganese cathode or a lithium ion phosphate cathode. So there's all different products. All these vanadium batteries are just the vanadium pentoxide electrolyte. So, and the benefits of it compared to the lithium ones is you can fully charge it, fully discharge it without affecting the properties of it.
And the
so
life
if you
of the
if
battery.
You fully discharge a lithium battery, you fuck it. Yep. And if you fully charge it and keep it fully charged, you go past that sweet point, it degrades over time. You get the, I don't think it's dendrites or whatever. So that affects the performance.
Like,
so
that's kind of like why your laptop, computer battery. Yeah, why your laptop no longer has that full battery after two bloody years of having the thing.
Jeez, picked a bloody hit a nerve there. So, and like after 20 or 30 years, you can actually, like they can, these can operate for 20 to 30 years. And then at the end, you can take the vanadium back out of the electrolyte and it's in the exact same state as when you put it in. So it doesn't degrade at all. So
if they can really prove up this on a large scale, like you said, have it.
Well,
it is
proven. It's just cost too much to make them.
Yeah,
because you haven't got the uptake yet around. So, like, I did a video on one not long ago, a couple of years ago now, probably a year and ago with SMEC. So they're with Ultra Power Systems, and we'll go into how they're linked up here. So they were sending their batteries out to, I think, IGO, to exploration. It was going to power an exploration camp. So they had a big solar array that then fed into the battery and that powered a bloody mine camp. So a small one. So that's where they go. So
how about we crack into where it comes from around the world? Like, which countries are the big producers of it?
Well, last year, 70,000 tonne come out of China. So pretty sure they just pour acid over the hill there and leach it out of mountains like she's beautiful. Pretty rough, I reckon, from beautiful. What I've heard. 17,000 tonne come out of Russia.
Now, I wonder if the environmental standards are any
now, I'm not sure if their mines or their recycling one as well, if they're bringing that back out of slag or not. 9,000 tonne come out of South Africa. So a lot of that come from, like, so it's come from the Bushveld, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, the Bushveld.
Bushveld region. So, and the company, one of the companies is Bushveld and the other is Glencore. So they're the two main producers of it over there.
Bushveld Minerals, right?
Yeah. Yep. So, and then 6,000 tonne come from Brazil. So that's mostly from Largo Resources. So they've got the highest grade vanadium mine in the world. They commissioned that in 2014. So they're the producers.
Okay, so let's get into the companies now. How about we focus on the ASX? Obviously, we've got Neo Metals, who we're talking about.
Yeah.
Do you take a bit of a look at what other sort of players are out there?
Yeah, and like, because before we get into that, I'll give a bit of, before I go into what these players are and what they are pricing their studies at. Like, you look at we'll put up the vanadium chart here for vanadium pentoxide. So you look at it, had a pretty decent peak early in 2022, $12 a pound US.
I'm thinking, just looking at that chart, that given that, 20% of the world stuff comes from Russia, that might have got a huge tick up in early 22 with the war, eh?
Yeah, possibly, yeah. Yeah. And I think, but then there was also the talk of, I think everything was having an uptick then, like nickel as well, with the battery revolution. But it seems
it had a bit of a tear throughout 2021 as well, jumping, you know, almost doubling through 2021 too.
Yeah, so. So I think it's just sort of eased off a bit. So it's currently sitting at about $7.50 US a pound. So keep that number in mind, everyone.
So that's vanadium pentoxide.
So the ferrovanadium is what goes into the steel hardening. Vanadium pentoxide is what goes into the vanadium redox flow batteries.
Yeah.
I think. God, I'm putting myself out there today. I don't know. There's a lot of risk in this.
Back yourself, mate.
I fucked up a bloody vanadium episode back in the early Channel 9 news days and said something stupid. So
mate, we're on a learning curve.
Anyway, the early days. So overall, no producers in Australia today.
Okay, explorers.
That sums it up. So obviously said Neo Metals, that's one of the players. So in addition to this proposed vanadium recovery facility in Finland, they're planning to stockpile vanadium ore to be later processed from their Barambi titanium and vanadium project in WA. So it's primarily a titanium mine, but they're going to stockpile the vanadium separately to possibly process later. So that comes from these, vanadium titanomagnetite deposits.
Yep,
so
okay.
So they're the hard rock vanadium deposits, which vanadium, it's a titanium iron deposit that vanadium is a byproduct of.
Yeah, and titanium, you know, they're quite similar as well. Titanium is commonly used as a hardening agent in military applications.
Paint your golf driver. Yep. It's in your golf. Paint your golf driver too.
Of course. Yeah. So Australia Vanadium, I know they're another explorer out there.
Yeah, so you've got, you can nearly tie Australian Vanadium and Technology Metals together. So that's AVL and TMT. So they're two separate companies. They're in the Murchison. They've got two separate plans, but they're mining the exact same ore body. So their tenements are on either end. They're on the same ore body. But I'll separate them in the context of AVL. They're planning to haul their concentrate from the Murchison, just south of Meekatharra, down to their proposed downstream facility at Geraldton that they want to build. That's their plan, because they want to hook into the existing gas infrastructure there.
How often do we talk about Geraldton? It's all happening there, mate.
Oh, no.
Back the port of Geraldton.
Nothing like
the processing hub.
I interviewed a bloke in Geraldton. I drove up to Geraldton to interview an air legger one day.
Fucking hell, there
stayed,
you go.
Stayed the night, had a few beers, resisted the bloody...
I don't doubt that you did.
I had to work, I was still mining, so I had to resist the green ciggies, but yeah, anyway. Whereas TMT on the other side, so they're planning to build their full facility on-site at Meekatharra to produce the vanadium pentoxide. So instead of trucking the concentrate 500 km to Geraldton. So AVL are going to use the gas for their downstream, but they're still going to have to truck all their concentrate 500 km to Geraldton, whereas TMT will only have to just take bloody vanadium pentoxide powder, which will be absolute bugger all volume to get out.
Yep.
So that's who's right? Who knows? It would make sense that one company did it.
Yeah.
I think one company seeking the CapEx rather than two is probably pretty bloody hard. But they're both on the same ore body. It's just a big long
one. One of them, I can see you said CapEx 450 on one and 600 on the other.
TMT CapEx in their 2019 study was $454 million and an IRR of 34%. But that was in 2019 and based on a $10.88 per pound US vanadium price, and that's sitting at $7.50 at the moment.
Okay, so price has gone on cost price has gone up heaps. And commodity prices come down heaps.
And then you got AVL, so they're in their 2022 study. I think that was a bankable feasibility study. $604 million CapEx at an IRR of 20.6%. And that was based on $10.50 per pound for the vanadium. Look, it's 25-year mine life, but, big amounts of CapEx to get these things going. AVL also build the VSun vanadium redox flow batteries as well. So they've got that's one of their subsidiaries. So
we need to wait for the next cycle in vanadium before these ones get funding.
Yeah, big massive uptick. So that's the first two. I guess you'd probably think, why such high CapEx? So when you're processing these hard rock vanadium titanomagnetite deposits, they require a roasting to get to that stage. So it's a similar concept to what a refractory gold deposit requires. You need like a big kiln.
Yep. A lot of energy needs to go in that process as well.
Yeah. Similar, exactly the same as a nickel laterite or a refractory gold. It's a lot of CapEx to get it happening. Now you've also got VR8. Vanadium Resources Limited. They've secured one of the more obvious names, Vanadium Resources Limited.
And an eight.
Oh yeah, interesting. We know what that eight means.
A lucky number.
Chinese ownership. Not sure. I didn't check that. So their project is actually in the Bushveld region in South Africa. Mm-hmm. So, which we mentioned that before. So, they've got a two-stage CapEx of $594 million, IRR of 47% for a 25-year mine life. They've used $9.50 a pound in their study, so a bit closer to what it is today. You can see on the chart here that they conveniently put in their own presentation. So, they've got nearly triple the resource size of TMT and AVL from this chart. So, you can see where they sit there. They're all pretty similar grade. But you see that outlier there. JD,
I do, mate.
The big long one. So that's Richmond Vanadium, RVT. So that outlier is the resource size, but you see their grade is a lot lower. So they've got the Julia Creek Vanadium project in Queensland. So this project, it's a one of a kind. It's one of the largest non-titanomagnetite vanadium deposits. So they've got the massive resource, as you can see. The grade's a bit lower, but the key thing is, to my knowledge, is the processing. So this is it's a free dig operation, like it's a surface free dig. It's like a similar to a clay thing.
Yep.
They talk about marine sediments or something like that. So it's all free dig, but it's not from talking to numerous parties that aren't in that company. It's not a fully proven flow sheet. It requires a lot more acid to make it work.
And do we know what recoveries they would actually be able to achieve?
Yeah, and that's the thing. They have done testing, but it's this project is heavily dependent on acid consumption or getting the supply of acid and achieving the recoveries that they're going to set out. So that's how, RV Richmond are claiming they can or going to make it work. So, yeah, we'll wait and see. So I guess their latest prezzo says their first plan was to concentrate in Australia and then ship it overseas, downstream process in China, I think it was. So that was 242 mil capex and an IRR of 38%. So a bit lower capex, but they're now looking into downstream processing it in Queensland. Their bankable feasibility studies on the way. So as I said, heavily dependent on acid consumption and whether they can achieve the metallurgical recovery. So
all right, so you know they're all explorers. Have we got actually like a history of vanadium mining here? Is there companies that these guys can point to that said they did it right?
Well, there was a project, so this is how we'll finish it off, JD.
It's an unconvincing start.
Yeah, you look at this story and you think it'd be enough to scare anyone off from starting a vanadium mine, which shows that how dependent this whole vanadium process is on the vanadium price. So you've got the privately owned Atlantic Vanadium. So this Atlantic Vanadium is a subsidiary of the Salim group of companies. So it's a big conglomerate in Indonesia, and they've got the Windamara Vanadium project. So that's just... I think it's about 40, just east of Mount Magnet. I think about 40 k's east of Mount Magnet in
okay,
WA.
So
it's got a bloody colourful history, this one.
So in a similar sort of region to the Australian vanadium.
Yeah, because they're at Meekatharra, this one's down. And you'll see, I'll bring it up, you'll see on the Australian vanadium charts where this gas line, the main gas line ends, the Midwest gas line ends, that's where this project is. And we'll get into why that is during this. I'll go through the history of it, JD. Hang on with us.
So these guys, Atlantic Vanadium, they are the current owners?
They're the current owners.
And were they the ones that tried to get it into production from the sounds of things?
One of, yeah.
Okay, all right, so, run me through it.
Oh, mate. So Xstrata initially commissioned the mine in 2000. Like before, it was discovered in the 1960s. Like even BHP and Alcoa were exploring there in the 1980s. But it actually got commissioned in 2000 by Xstrata. It got shut down in 2003. So they lost 10.5 million in 2002, shut down in 2003. It was initially promoted as the world's biggest producer of vanadium, this project was going to be. So, and because this was going to be a pretty big thing. So the WA government gave like Western Power interest-free loans to fund their share of the $50 million gas pipeline from Geraldton to Windamara. So, and that's, as I said, that's the gas pipeline you'll see on AVL's presentations going directly east. So that was for this project. So, and then look, the government also chipped in $10 million for road and airport upgrades in Mount Magnet, which are probably handy these days since all the mining, extra mining. So look, the government wasn't happy with the old Swiss mining joint of Xstrata. Xstrata then sold it to Precious Metals Australia. They dismantled it. Precious Metals Australia. So they seem to have had a stake in it before the commissioning. So they actually sold 40% to Xstrata in 2000 because of the low vanadium prices. And then so they've bought it back off them and renamed it Windamara Vanadium in 2007. So Precious Metals were renamed to Windamara Vanadium in 2007. So that's the first shutdown.
Yep.
Then fast forward to 2009. So both the parent entity was called Windamara Vanadium Limited and their subsidiary was called Midwest Vanadium Proprietary Limited. They held the project. They were both placed into voluntary administration. After they got it back up and so they hadn't even got it back up and going. So I think they were going to get it back up and going, but went into administration.
Okay, so is this now where Atlantic, do they come in after this VA?
So you've got
2010
to 2010. So you've got MinRes signed a JV with Atlantic. So Atlantic is the one that owns it now.
Yep.
Atlantic with this owned by this Indonesian conglomerate. Yep. So MinRes and Atlantic signed a JV to get Windamara back up and going. So MinRes were going to build and operate the project. So remember, Xstrata dismantled the whole thing. So it had to be rebuilt. MinRes then got cold feet and smartly, looking at the history, smartly sold their share to Atlantic in 2010. So Atlantic...
In the same year they got into it.
Yeah. So it looked like, I think they signed the agreement in like March and then sold the agreement in, sold their share in August. Okay. So Midwest Vanadium, which was owned by Atlantic, which is owned by this Indonesian conglomerate. So Midwest was the owner of the mine. They Midwest operated the mine from that, I think it was about 2010, 2011, when they got it back up and going fully, and they went into receivership then again in 2015. So that's three companies that have gone into...
They were together with the Windamurra Vanadium in 2009.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So I think
third time not so lucky. That brings us to 2015, roughly.
Yeah, apparently in 2014 there was a massive fire which pretty much buggered the whole joint. So
we'll chuck that photo
I'll
up on YouTube.
Chuck the photo up on YouTube. So it looked like from that point in 2014, that absolutely buggered it, and they went into receivership in 2015. So this Midwest Vanadium is a subsidiary of Atlantic, owned by the Indonesian conglomerate. So then in 2016. Atlantic, who is the one of the levels up, like in between
one of the parent companies,
in between Midwest Vanadium and this Sulim, which is the Drogsberg or something, they bought the project back from their own subsidiary, Midwest Vanadium, in May 2016. So they bought it off themselves.
Okay, and do you have a sort of grasp on what sort of money had gone into?
Well, I think they said $560 million to date at that point. $560 million was put into developing that project. So that includes what this Precious Metals Australia put into it back in the 90s as well. But Atlantic quote this number today to be $700 million. So I don't know if they've converted the 560 to today's dollars. About 560 to 700 million Aussie dollars had been put into this project over its lifetime.
Yeah, but it's still going. It's not actually mining that, because you said there's no vanadium mines operating. So it's still on care and maintenance.
So since 2016, since Atlantic bought it back off themselves, it's been in care and maintenance. So it's been sitting there. So if there's any vanadium project that will come online first in Australia that is pretty much sitting there ready to go, I think they still need to do a bit of mill, like, so that obviously do upgrades and repairs and refurb to the mill, which would be a bit of work and a bit of capital, but that is the one that'll be first to market. I could nearly put my left nut on. Windamurra will be first to market.
Okay.
So that's if that Sulim group, that conglomerate, wants to put the coin in again and take the risk, because they've already lost money on it once.
Yeah.
Would they want to do it again?
So I'm sure that they don't probably reveal too much, but it'd be fascinating to know what sort of number they need to flick it back on, and also what the sort of incentive price is for them to operate. I dare say, given where it is, it might be somewhere similar to that $10 region, but that's a bit of a thumbs up.
Yeah, I think 12, it'd be definitely 12 to 15 and get it over the line, I think. But definitely not $7.50 where it is at the moment.
Rightio, sensational, Matty.
Loved it. I think I lost me. When you start asking me questions, I'm like, oh, just shush, just let me roll. Oh, you're going to confuse me now.
Wow. So
there we go.
We started with Neo Metals.
Yeah.
And we ended up with the history of Windamurra.
Yeah, so I thought that was interesting, and I didn't know that whole Midwest gas pipeline was built for that. Like, this was, I wasn't around in Western Australia then, but this thing was bloody a big, massive thing when Xstrata was huge.
Yep.
And then obviously Glencore bought Xstrata later on after the Xstrata lost a shitload on the Jubilee.
Yeah, one of many punts.
Congrats, Kerry Amanis, you're rich as fuck.
All right, how about we get into another... historic sort of mining asset in WA, Nifty. So like we said, we're going to talk a bit about Cyprian. Now they're trying to recapitalize the business. So they were last capped at about $80 million when they last traded, which was in February of this year.
So recapitalizing is trying to polish a turd is another term for that.
Yeah, let's think of it that way, Matty. So $80 million market cap when they last traded. At roughly, well, that was an 11 cent share price. So I'm going to start this story a couple of weeks ago when they did a debt financing round. So they raised in debt 21 million Aussie through the private equity group Nebari. And some of the sort of standout terms of that debt facility were that it was across two tranches, one of $7.5 million US and one of $7 million. It was a coupon which was SOFR plus 6.5% to be payable monthly. So think about 12-ish percent. There was also a term of 18 months, so bullet payment or bullet repayment at the end of next year. And there was also some warrants in there too. They flagged they'd have a strike price of 20% above whatever the next raise was, which is the raise that was done a couple or today. So that strike price of those warrants is 4.8 cents. So that's one of the tougher financings we've spoken about on the show since we got going, Maddie. It put some under the pump pretty soon on. So the capital raising, which they announced today, they got firm commitments for $24 million and another five in an entitlement offer. And this raising is to be done at 4 cents. Maddie, I said they last traded at 11.
11.
So that's a 63% discount. It's pretty hefty. It's a bit of a burn for the existing shareholders there. And
I know what it feels like to be burned as an existing shareholder, put it that way.
And for the new investors, for the risk they're taking on, they're getting an oppie on a 1-for-2 basis with a 6 cent strike price. So let's get into what they're trying to achieve. Obviously, I said Nifty, it's a historic asset, which a lot of people in WA are quite familiar with. So their goal is to turn this again into a long life, you know, large scale open pit asset. And they're targeting 100,000 tonnes per annum of copper to be.
Are they abandoning the underground side? Is this a new part?
The focus is all open pit. So the shorter term will be oxide focus, and then the longer term will be sulfide.
I didn't look at it today with you. Is it a new ore body? It must be on the site, but it's not part of the Nifty Underground's bloody.
From my understanding, the majority of the history of the mining has been on just the one ore body.
Yep.
And then this is a somewhat of a different part. That's why they can do this in an open pit and not have to be underground at all.
Oh, because they sound like that gives it some sort of hope.
Yeah, well.
Because the underground was just absolutely bloody raped and pillaged by Ditya Birla. They just fucked that mine. So.
Well, we'll see if there's any hope left. The restart cost that the company flagged when they went into hold in like February was roughly 250 million Aussie. So they announced offtakes, they announced debt financing, they even announced a capital raising all between December and February of this year, and they all fell over. They were all sort of contingent on other things happening that never ended up happening. So the Nifty restart for the oxide part of the project had a capital cost of 149 million. And a max drawdown of 193 million, and the NPV came out at 277 million.
So it's not that's pretty bloody low NPV. So their goal is to produce eventually 100,000 ton of copper per year.
Yep, but they will be targeting 20 to 25,000 tons per annum of oxide copper production.
Yep.
In the earlier stages, hence the lower capital cost and the lower NPV. So this study was done on a $10,000 per tonne copper price. So in pounds, that's $4.08.
Yep.
At a $9,000.
So it's a bit below nine at the moment, hey?
Yeah, roughly. So say $9,000 a tonne, so $3.67 a pound, which is round about where we are, the NPV is only 101 million.
There we are. So NPV for everyone, the golden rule, if it's zero or less, it's – you lose money.
Exactly. And realistically, trying to finance something, it's like as a ratio, you know, a bit of a thumb suck against the capex, it's got to be a bit higher. Yeah.
Right. So that's but God, if they could get this operation up to 100,000 ton per annum of copper once they get into the sulfides, that's pretty impressive. DeGrussa, which was one of the flagship ones in Australia for high grade, that was 65,000 ton a year.
Yeah, obviously, that was a much, much higher grade mine than what this would be.
Oh, Nifty back in the day, apparently underground there was bloody high grade.
Yeah,
there's
a chart in the DFS where you can see the grade over time, and back in the day, super high, then it drifted lower, and then ticked up again as they sort of changed up where they're mining and how they're mining. But
Yeah, anyway, yeah. Absolute big ball of fuck, that joint.
So. Yeah, so since the company went into the halt, they've cleaned out the management, they've changed up the board. They want to put the money that they've just raised into doing a life of mine study for the copper oxide starter operation, which is what we were just speaking about with those numbers there. And then later on, they're looking to do a much bigger sulfide open pit operation. Yeah. So like I sort of said, within 2 years of final investment decision, they're going to be looking to do 20 to 25,000 tonnes per annum of copper. And the use of funds, one of them is working capital for this capital raising. Now, straight away, I'm thinking that debt that they signed 2 weeks ago that's payable monthly, that is going to be one of the working capital payments that they need to be making. And there's one other thing that punters, having a look at this one, need to keep in mind. We spoke about Metals X, like you touched on at the beginning of the show. Yeah. Now, they are the ones that sold Nifty to Cyprium along with a couple other assets. And they, in turn, received $24 million from memory in cash and $36 million worth of convertible notes. So you'll remember when we did an EV calc, Maddie, on these guys, we attributed no value, just to be conservative, to these con notes.
Yep.
Now, they're due in March 2025. Now, in the event that Cyprium would not be able to meet any of the debt repayments because they've just signed that debt with quite onerous terms, you'd have both Metals X and this PE group, Nabari, with rights, you know, priority before any equity holders would get a look into anything left on
so
the company.
And so that's what, you know, you and Trav have been talking about in an administration event, the people that get first right to whatever funds are the top of the debt.
Yeah, the most senior debt. So con notes traditionally sit in between the equity and the debt. So the senior debt is at the top.
So shareholders get the scraps, if anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So just to round off on Cyprium, the company has a general meeting in late August and they've said to the ASX that they don't want their voluntary suspension lifted until that's done. So we won't be seeing them on the boards for probably another couple months or so.
Yeah. So what's your, I guess, general opinion on this after being going deep in them, JD? Where's it heading?
Hey, it's a very, very tough one. Obviously, we touched on the raising there, but they're going to need to raise another huge amount just to turn that thing into a mine. But, you know, like anything, like many of the other Aussie copper producers we've spoken about, they've got a lot of leverage to a higher copper price. So if that thesis that we've heard endlessly over the past little while comes to bear, then it'll go well. If not, they'll be in a bit of strife.
Yeah, it looks a very high-risk operation with that very low NPV for the capital required. So
exactly, mate.
Very good, JD. Thank you very much, mate.
Mate,
and
well
thank
done
you
on your
too,
part, Vanadium.
Christopher, for the bloody beautiful
poem. The beautiful poem. Stay tuned for poem number two tomorrow.
I'm going to read it to the missus tonight to get her in the mood, I think. So, righto, go the Blues.
On that note, hootaroo.
Hootaroo.
The information contained in this episode of Money of Mine is of general nature only and does not take into account the objectives, financial situation or needs of any particular person. Before making any investment decision, you should consult with your financial advisor and consider how appropriate the advice is to your objectives, financial situation and needs.